Hello and welcome to the Dune Minute Podcast, your place to dive deep, minute by minute, into the cinematic adaptation of Frank Herbert's World of Dune. I'm one of your hosts, John.
And I am Zach.
And we are back. It's Tuesday, and we're talking about minute 81 through 82 of Dune Part 2. How are you?
I am still doing good.
In the 10-minute break between when we ended the last episode and now.
I'm still doing good. Still alive.
If it even was 10 minutes, honestly.
Still alive. Well, we had to go to the bathroom and we talked about water heaters. Yeah. I had to, we're talking about, like, I'm getting my water heater replaced tomorrow. It's the joy of home ownership. I would like to put a water recirculator in, but that's maybe not going to be an option.
As someone with a water recirculator, I have told you, and I'm telling everyone that's listening, it's worth it.
Yeah.
Instant hot water. Always great.
I know. So tankless is not a viable option for where I live. It takes like 5 minutes for the water to heat up in the furthest bathroom from the heater. So, yeah, a water circulator would be a really good thing, I think.
I mean, why not?
I don't know.
If you're a plumber, email duneminute@gmail.com and tell Zach if we're, making a good decision.
Although this will
come out. It'll be way too late.
I will promptly ignore it because this is happening tomorrow in real world time.
Yep. Which is like
a month or so from when you're hearing this.
So. Yeah. Oh, well.
By the time the lovely folks out there hear this, I will be just in glorious instant hot water or not already.
We'll find out.
All right, cool. Yes, 81 through 82, the Baron is continuing his soliloquy about the ramifications of their actions.
Of the Emperor's actions.
Of the Emperor's actions, yeah. Yes. And he goes on to explain that the great houses would rise against him, and it would create a vacancy that the Harkonnens would fill.
And who would sit on the throne? Fade Rautha. Harkonnen!
Exactly.
I love the way that he like stresses to say Harkonnen like that. Couple reasons that I could think of, and this is all headcanon, there's nothing in Art and Soul of Dune about it. But first one is kind of tied into your theory from yesterday about why Vladimir wouldn't want the throne, where he can use Fade as like a puppet emperor, yeah, but still also benefit from all of the, financials of spice production. But secondly, I think he also stresses like that because this is the longest that we've seen him talk in one sitting since his accident, quote unquote, with Leto.
Oh yes,
with the gas, and we know that he's got his like rebreather devices.
His "you have a wonderful kitchen, cousin" speech.
Yeah, as he's questionably maybe eating some sligs. Who knows?
Maybe.
All we know from Art and Soul Part 1 is that there's a giant, like, lizard Gila monster-looking thing on the table. So
it's supposed to be the most delectable meat.
Who knows? But yeah, maybe it's just also because, like, he's at his, like, the end of his limit of being able to speak at that point.
Oh, maybe. Yeah. I find it interesting that he stresses Harkonnen because Harkonnen is not even Fade's real last name.
Yeah, and we talked about...
It's Rabban or Rabban.
Yeah.
Because, the Beast Rabban's full name is Glossu Rabban.
Glossu?
Glossu, maybe.
We talked about this with Dees, I think.
We did, yeah.
Yeah.
And he never got the last name Harkonnen because the Emperor likes Fade more. The Emperor gave Fade the true last name Harkonnen.
The Emperor?
Sorry, the Baron gave Fade the true last name Harkonnen, excuse me.
Yeah.
Now, here in my notes, I just wrote the word supposedly.
Do that again. Sorry.
So here in my notes, I just wrote the word supposedly.
Okay.
Because I find it hard to believe that the Harkonnens would not catch strays, basically. If the great houses were to find out what all went down, mm-hmm, the Harkonnens would be just as liable as the Emperor.
Yeah, maybe not. Because remember, there's no satellites over Arrakis.
At least the Southern Hemisphere, yeah.
Right. Well, as far as the movie is concerned, there are no satellites over Arrakis at all.
There is no war in Ba Sing Se.
Yes. Yeah, pretty much. So, you know, this really is a matter of, you know, he said, she said to the Landsrad. We know that Duke Leto's influence was definitely like growing significantly in the Landsrad as well. You know, they, in the movie and in the books, but like, because we're talking about the movie and we're sticking with no satellites over Arrakis at all. That is the point of contention, you know, in part one, the Atreides voice is rising.
Yep.
So if you have a, I wouldn't say hated, but if you have a less liked greater house, kill a very loved greater house completely, then yeah, I mean, you know,
they're going to catch
emotions. Emotions will, you know, come up before logic in that point.
Sure.
And, you know, there will be issues and the Harkonnens will also catch strays.
Yep.
But the bigger crime is that the Sardaukar were used to eliminate a greater house.
Yes.
So I agree with you.
It, I mean, to further that point, they're weak right now. You know, the Baron has already said that they've spent almost all of their house reserves. The
from
money.
80 years from of 80 spice years. Production.
Yeah, on the attack. So they're financially weak. They're weak militarily because the Fremen are fucking running over them right now.
I mean, they're literally on their doorstep just blowing shit up.
Yeah, yeah. We don't know about other military forces that they have elsewhere, but it's safe to say, I mean, I feel safe to say that Arrakis is getting the major focus of their forces.
Yep.
So... from an outside perspective, if I am even one or two other great houses joining up together, we could probably wipe out the Harkonnens in the same, you know, swoop that you wipe out the Emperor or retaliate against.
Yeah. I don't know about, you know, the Emperor, because we know that the Atreides house were like really the only ones that could probably, you know, stand up
fair
against the Sardaukar.
His would be more of a battle in court, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. His would be a political battle. The Harkonnens would absolutely be decimated though.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm thinking of all this and that's what makes the Baron's speech a little,
hollow,
yes, but also just like outlandish.
Yeah.
You know, this is just like this is a pipe dream.
But what is Vladimir if not outlandish?
Yeah, I guess, but he's also very pragmatic.
Yeah.
So it doesn't seem logical that he's thinking this is going to happen the way that he's explaining it.
Yeah.
Which then just circles back to my, these are empty words to get Fade to do what he wants.
Yeah, I can see it.
So, I don't know. Running theory. New running theory. Let's see it.
Before we move on to the rest of this minute, though, I want to talk about one thing in particular, and it's like the shots that are being set up here.
Mm-hmm.
So, last minute, Fade began approaching the tub, and he's walking down the stairs, and like, I don't know if you noticed this, but he like kind of begins like looking around and like, you know, head down a little bit, like slowly doing this, and you know, as Vladimir is, you know, giving him this speech about how the Emperor helped destroy the Atreides and all of that stuff, our camera shots are going back and forth between Vladimir and Fade. And each time we go on to Fade, he's, you know, leaning a little more and more forward into that camera frame. And at the very end, when we hear Fade Rotha Harkonnen, Austin Butler is giving probably one of the best Kubrick stares I have seen in a very long time. And it's so good. And I think that protruding forehead like definitely helps a lot.
Yeah.
But oh man. And like the thing is too, is like Fade's almost like kind of shaking like that, like side, not in fear, but just like you can see his jaw clenching up super hard, which is like causing the rest of his head to kind of like shake a little bit. And everything like he's
getting amped, man.
He is the pressure cooker that is building in this moment. And then that Kubrick stare is just the cherry on top.
Yeah. I mean, one of the defining characteristics of the Kubrick stare is the light being hidden from your eyes,
dead eyes. Yeah.
So yeah, that protruding forehead's lifting a lot of weight there,
but it's a very good shot.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It is. So we cut from fade.
Mm-hmm.
Do we fade from fade?
No, we
it's
cut.
It's a cut.
Yeah. It's an instant cut because it's an explosive cut.
Yes.
Fireworks are still going on. We are outside in Gady Prime, but it's nighttime now.
It is. And so this is Fade's fate that I talked about last week with Alicia.
Not with Alicia.
So this is Fade's fate that I talked about last week on the show. The celebration, if we remember from the book, that the fight was over relatively quickly, and he did not kill. Well, he did kill him, but he did not cut the head off the Atreides soldier like the crowd wanted him to. So they were still like amped up, and they didn't, you know, they didn't get their release. So the Baron decided to throw a fete, which, you know, translates just a big party.
F-E-T-E for people that are.
Yes. I think there's another character over one of
these. It's like a little carrot stick. I don't know what it's called.
I can't remember.
Yeah.
But I think this is what we're getting to see on screen here. This is the celebration of Fade.
It is. The party's continuing. Like I said, it's nighttime now, so the fireworks are white instead of black like we saw earlier.
These look so cool at night. I don't know if they look cooler than they do in the day, but dang, they look cool at night.
They do look really cool.
Yeah.
I've got some notes from Art and Soul about this, and then, you know, during some of the later minutes, I've got some more Art and Soul stuff. But I want to talk about it now because we're here. And then, so the way that these fireworks were done was that they were all built and modeled within Unreal Engine 5, which is normally a video game engine, but has been being used more and more in the production of movies and TV shows. And that makes sense to do because it's a engine that allows for all sorts of crazy visual effects and everything. And I don't know if you noticed this when you were watching.
Well, real quick, before you get too far away from that, would I know of any games that is made with Unreal?
Oh,
or is it just most of them?
It is a very long list. Okay. So you probably know some, but
is Portal 1 or 2?
No.
Okay.
Portal is made in Source. Bethesda has their own engine. Trying to think of any other games that you would have played. Like, none of Nintendo's games are made in Unreal. They're all
Harvest Moon.
I have no fucking idea.
The Game Boy game?
Yeah, Harvest no. Moon. It's not Unreal.
That's the last game I played, so.
But yeah, there's like a lot of really cool like visual effects and stuff that can be done really quickly or relatively quickly within Unreal. I'm not a game dev though, so like my knowledge of the actual intricacies of the engine is more from the player side, but from a creative side, another show that Unreal is famously used in is The Mandalorian with their like volume that they have, which is essentially a giant round room full of LED panels.
Oh, the volume. Capital T, capital V.
Yeah, capital V volume.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
And what they do in there is the camera position is basically mimicking the camera in the world that they create in Unreal. So as the camera moves, it like directly moves with the light and everything around the actors. We don't get that level of depth with Dune, sure. At least in this movie. I don't know if they would ever like try and do something like that in future movies.
I'm glad they don't, because that means they're relying more on the practical.
Correct.
Which is good.
Yeah. I feel like the one case that might have been better for, though, was last week's minutes with everything that we had. But, you know.
Fair enough.
Then they wouldn't have been able to shoot in IR either, because it wouldn't have been directly under sunlight. So,
right.
Give and take. One thing that I also noticed, though, and, you know, this is a very Dune Minute kind of observation. I don't know if you were looking at the ground during all of this.
I was looking at my computer.
Oh, my God. Jesus Christ. If you were looking at the ground during the fireworks and everything going off, it almost looked like the note that Dee's made about how oil is kind of like spilling up from the ground on Gady Prime is actually acknowledged in this movie, because it looks like there's just a giant oil slick under this like super long bridge and everything. Like
oceans of oil, maybe.
It's not like oceany though, because it's, I mean, you've seen pictures of oil slicks, how it like, you know, sits in low spots between the sand, and that's just like, it looks like tiger stripes of oil on the ground.
Sure.
You kind of have that same thing going on here.
Okay. I'll have to go back and look. Cause no, I didn't notice that when I was doing the minute.
It's a like brief second look at it frame by frame kind of thing.
Cool. Well, maybe
they do have some acknowledgement of that.
Big if true.
Huge if true. You know what else is huge?
The Big Pimple Building?
Well, the Big Pimple Building, but also the big bridge. But you know what's inside the bridge?
Hang on. John, what have we not seen at all this movie?
A motherfucking glow globe!
Party noise sounds here.
This is our first glow globe of Dune Part 2.
Man. Only 82 minutes in.
For those of you that are more new to the show, I fucking love glow globes.
They're the best.
Zach loves glow globes. We talked a lot about glow globes in part one.
They're the hardest workers in this whole story.
Them and the heart mollusks.
Yes. Yes. Well, one has been acknowledged on screen. So.
Fair. Yeah. Our first glow globe.
And this is a weird one. We'll talk a little bit more about it as the week goes on. We don't get a good look at it right here.
Each house gets their own stylized glow globe. And we'll see this later on in the movie as well.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, they kind of fit the decor, you know?
Yeah.
When we see it in better detail, we'll talk more about it. But I'm just so excited that we have a glow globe back on screen.
All those little bacteria just doing, you know, bioluminescent things.
They're fucking here, man.
But yes, this is the most Harkonnen ass looking glow globe. And I love it. It's huge, too.
Yes.
Fun fact for, you know, this glow globe, it's so big that they have it on like a whole ass like camera crane to move it around. Like it's a practical object. Mm-hmm. They just like got rid of the camera crane that it like sits on and everything to move it around. But yeah, nice. Like it is there just sitting next to Austin Butler the whole time.
Is it safe to say that would be the thing you take from set?
I would take one of the Atreides glow globes.
Yeah. Okay. Not the...
I wouldn't take the Harkonnen one because it is like an actual beach ball size. It's huge.
Well, the Atreides ones ain't nothing to scoff at.
They're easier to fit into like bookshelves or whatever you would want to put them on.
Fair enough.
Because they're more like... They're more like tall, narrow, like wheel shape rather than just a big ball. So
that is fair.
I would definitely hang the Harkonnen one from my ceiling to replace the boob light that's in my living room.
Is it the emperor who had the really long ones or is that just in prophecy?
In prophecy, the Emperor had the really long ones. We hadn't seen any of the Emperor's glow globes in part two.
Okay.
And we don't at all. We'll have one new style of glow globe to talk about later.
Okay.
That's, you know, in a bit. But in the 84 Lynch film, they also had the very long... like glow bars, basically.
Fluorescent lights.
Yeah. Fluorescent lights on fishing string.
Yeah. So this glow globe is doing the best job of just following Fade down this hallway.
It's doing glow globe things and it's fucking killing it.
Yep. Fade is thinking very intensely as he's walking down this corridor. And we get to see like flashes of lights from the fireworks outside coming through the windows. Really cool lighting here. It's simple, you know, it's just flashes of light coming from outside, but the way that it lights up the corridor, as this, you know, minute and the next one goes on, super cool. I really, really enjoyed it.
It's very like horror movie inspired.
Yeah.
Very dark and stormy night.
Exactly. He hears something behind him. And he kind of tilts his head back a little bit.
Well, the camera... So speaking of the horror movie-like thing, you know, we have the super up-close shot of just Fade's eyes and, like, his nose and his forehead. And then we bounce the camera to behind Fade, and he, like, begins to turn his head. And then we bounce the camera back to in front of Fade, where we're looking at a wider shot of just, like, his profile.
And he's out of focus.
Or his, like, portrait.
Yeah.
And then the camera, like, kind of shifts off to the side, and we see a sneaky, shadowy figure about 40 to 50 paces back.
Yeah, just, I said about 20 yards.
Just, like, you know, super methodical, step over step. Mm-hmm. We don't know who it is, because this is not a silhouette that we are familiar with. Not directly.
Not super familiar with.
Yeah.
So we get a couple more seconds of walking. This kind of this slow motion chase scene is going on, and then we get to see who it is.
Yeah,
it is Lady Margot Fenring following Fade through this corridor, and we get a close up on her face here, and instantly we have a knife being held at her neck.
A very unexplainable knife, because
yes.
All right. So I don't think the episode numbers line up, but this reminds me very much of in Dune Part 1 when Duncan Idaho Monty Python leaps down on top of a couple Harkonnen guards. Yeah. Fade was just 20 to 30 yards in front of Margot Fenring.
In this very wide hallway.
In this very wide hallway that, you know, was, you know, sporadically being lit up, but she would have probably noticed him walk off to the side and, like, try and hide or whatever. Yeah. The fireworks are too, you know, sporadic and too constant to always, like, keep the place kind of lit up. Also, there's a glow globe.
Yeah, right. I was about to say, he's got his own light source behind him.
Right. So, like, that's a little goofy, and it kind of puts you out of it.
I wrote that he Scooby-Dooed his way behind her. It's very silly.
Yeah.
Either
way, though, Fade's knife is at her throat.
Yeah. And my headcanon is that Fade thinks he's being really sneaky.
Yeah.
And she's just like, God damn it. What the fuck is this kid doing?
Well, and
but it's all part of her plan. Let him be big macho man for a second and, you know, sneak up on me, in air quotes.
And the little bit of dialogue that we have in these last few seconds seems to, you know, fall into that, you know, line of thinking, because Fade says, "You're following me." And her only response is, "Am I?"
It's very coy, very Bene Gesserit.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, that is where the minute ends here.
Yeah.
So we...
motherfucking globe.
I know, man.
Finally. So happy.
I think we could wrap it up. I was just wanting to go until we saw the glow globe. I think we can end it here.
That's the week. That's it.
That's the week. That's the movie. See you.
Well, no, we still have more glow globes.
Okay, fine. So we are now getting into the chapter of the movie, the section of the movie, I should say, called Fade Seduction.
Yes.
Which is something that is talked about and done in the books. We do not get it really explicitly, if I'm remembering correctly. We get a lot of, like, talk about it between the Fenrings, Count and Lady,
Hasimir and Margo.
Yeah, I know their names.
All right.
But it's cool to see that kind of spelled out on stage, because this is some, you know, they need to test him. They need to make sure that he is, you know, the person that they want to carry on the genetic material of, and all this kind of stuff, which we'll talk a lot more about towards the end of the week.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm excited to get into this, because Lady Fenring is one of the coolest characters in the story.
Yeah. Yeah. She's, oh God, I can't wait to talk about it. Yeah. So I just say we wrap it up here.
Okay.
So we can go ahead and start recording tomorrow's episode.
All right, cool. Well, if you want to get in touch with us, we are on a couple places online. We are bluesky@duneminute.com. You can reach out to our email address, which is duneminute@gmail.com. If you'd like to get in touch with us that way, And we will be back tomorrow to talk more and more about this super sultry conversation that's about to happen.
All right. Is it a conversation or is it? We'll see.
All right. See y'all there.
See ya.